Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and good afternoon. This is your host, Thomas Gibbons, on the Windy City Chronicle podcast. We have a lot of stuff on the show today. We have two guests coming on. We have Alex Pat, who writes about Chicago sports for WindyCityChronicle.com, and we have Michael Gibbons, who also writes for WindyCityChronicle.com. We got a big lineup on today's show. First, we're going to get into the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls lost Game 3, 104-87 to the Boston Celtics. We'll talk if they can go up 3-1 on Sunday. And Rondo out for the series, what adjustments should the Bulls make? Alex Pat will join us for that. He'll also join us for Cubs and Blackhawks talk. We will talk about the Cubs bullpen, Javier Baez, Kyle Hendricks, and Jason Hayward. For the Hawks, we will talk about Stan Bowman's comments today in the media. And we also talk about the offseason ahead. And we will hit on some of the NHL expansion draft. Who are the Hawks going to keep? Who are they not going to cover? And then Michael Gibbons will join us at 4 o'clock. We will talk about the Bears NFL draft. Will the Bears go QB at 3? Will they trade down? And the other offseason moves for the Bears to come before they hit the field for the preseason, which is almost right around the corner. Been a long NFL offseason, but the NFL draft is just a couple days away. And after that, the ball is going to keep rolling. And it'll be season before you know it. So let's get right into it. Bulls, Game 3, last night in Chicago, lost 104-87. It was a tough loss. I was at the game. I was fortunate enough to be at the game. And it wasn't what I saw in Games 1 and 2. Obviously, Rajon Rondo was not in the lineup. He had a fractured thumb. So he's out. He's going to be reevaluated in the next 7 to 10 days. But he has been told by doctors that he could be out a couple of weeks. So, yeah, Bulls lost 104-87. Quick stats here. Avery Bradley had 15 points. Al Horford had 18. Isaiah Thomas had 16. Isaiah Thomas got a nice applause from the crowd. Again, he has lost his sister. He lost his sister to a car accident. Very tragic event. Go on with the stats. We have Dwayne Wade at 18 points. Jimmy Butler, 14 points. Nico Mirotic added 11. Jimmy Butler did not have a game that we expected him to have, especially with Rajon Rondo being out. You know, we thought he would step up, and we knew we had to see a playoff Wade, and we did. We saw a lot of playoff Wade. Dwayne Wade was rolling in the first half, and he didn't really have it in the second half, and that's what caused the Bulls to not come back in this game. Jimmy and Dwayne Wade were combined 13 for 39 from the field. Again, we expected those numbers to be bigger with Rondo out. You know, the offense had to get rolling in some way, shape, or form. And especially at the beginning of the game, it was stagnant. It was a lot of isolation ball. It was not a lot of what we saw in games 1 and 2. You know, Rondo was getting the offense out there. He was getting the offense moving. And we hope that, you know, someone would step up. Jerry Grant, Michael Carter-Williams would step up, take control of the offense to get it going, and it just wasn't there. Jerry Grant only played 19 minutes in the start. He had 4 turnovers in the first quarter. And he was really on a short leash after that. And personally, I want to play him in game 4. I have somebody else who I'd like to see more. I'd like to see Denzel Valentine play some backup point guard or any shape or form get on the floor. I wrote a piece today on WindyCityChronicle.com. You can check it up. It's on my Twitter, @ThomasGibbons_3. I talked about how Denzel Valentine should get some backup point guard minutes and see the floor anyway, any shape or form. He averaged 7.8 assists in his last year at Michigan State. So I like what I see from him. I saw him play in the D League a couple times this year. I know that it's not the same as the NBA playoffs, but I like what I see from him. He's a facilitator. He can get out and run, and he ran the pick and roll fairly well down in Schaumburg, Illinois, and I think that is something that could translate to here in the NBA playoffs. I'm not saying you play him 25, 30 minutes. I'm saying give him some run with the second group. See what he can do. See if he can be serviceable. Because he was pretty confident. He was a pretty confident shooter when he got the minutes. When Gar and Pax said, "Let's play the rookies. Let's play the young guys along with competing for the playoffs." So I like what I see from him, and I would like to see him in the backup point guard spot. And with that, we are going to bring on Alex Pat. Alex Pat is on Twitter @ShyFanPat1. That is ShyFanPat 2T1. We're going to bring on Alex here, and we're going to continue this talk on Denzel Valentine and how the Bulls lineup should look in game 4. Hello,
how
Alex,
you doing,
you
Thomas? Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So I was just talking about how Denzel Valentine, I think, should get a run at the backup point guard slot, given that Jerian Grant and Michael Carter Williams did not have as good of a game as they should have in game three. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing it. We're in such a weird situation right now with the Bulls where they're the eighth seed. They're up 2 games to 1. You lose arguably your best player right now. At least Rondo's been the best player in the playoffs. Denzel Valentine, young guy. We've seen some flashes of him doing some good things. I just feel like at this point, knowing that the Bulls' point guard depth really isn't good, there's really no reason for me to say no to it. You know what I mean? It's like, just why not?
Yeah, that's what I was going about in my article is, give him a run. Let him see what he can do. There was a lot of chatter on Twitter and, and I think some in the Bulls post game is, let's get Denzel Valentine on the floor. He's one of your only, I'd say, decent shooters on the bench. You got him, you have Paul Zipser, Bobby Portis. So I mean, he's one of your best shooters on the bench right now, and I think you got to give
Right.
him a run. He is your lottery pick. I mean, you want the fans want to see him out there. He did, when he was given his good minutes in the regular season after the All-Star break, he was hitting his stride. He was getting confident. He was making shots, and I would like to see him as the facilitator, or at least get him on the floor at all. Get some shots up because the Bulls needed more of the 3-point scoring. Rondo wasn't a 3-point shooter, but he found guys open for the three. And I think
Yeah.
if Jimmy becomes the primary ball handler, or even Michael Carter Williams, I would like him to start game four because I'd like him to run the offense better than Jerian Grant. I'd want to see Valentine out there, either facilitating or, spotting up in the corner because he was shooting the ball pretty well toward the end of the regular season.
Yeah, you saw what Rondo did in the first two games. Like you said, he was getting guys open to pass the ball, and they'd, make a three, or they'd have a three attempt, or they'd generate a really good scoring chance. It really goes to show how Rondo kind of made the offense flow correctly, the way they needed to play against the Celtics. And without him, we saw last night, it shows what a huge difference that can make. And I don't know about you, but what I said yesterday when Rondo got hurt, I said that could have just thrown away the Bulls' chances to win this series. I really do believe that.
Yeah, I can agree with you there. And something that a lot of people are talking about is how, we wanted Rondo gone at the deadline. We wanted Garn Pax to buy him out, right? And now,
Right.
all of a sudden, when we saw the news that he was out for game three, we were all saddened by it because what we saw that he did for the first two games was something we didn't see from Rondo all year.
Yeah, I know. It's really funny because when they signed Rondo, I'm like, what are you signing Rondo for? He's a pain in the ass. He's
Yeah.
older. He's had injuries. What good does he do? In mid-season, we're like, why is this guy here? Just get rid of him. And now we're like,
Hoiberg
Rondo,
bench
come
him.
back. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
And we
Hoiberg
know there's
bench
no
him.
chance of him coming back, so.
No, and I hope that Garn Pax don't see this playoffs as his wine to come back. They have
Right.
to. They cannot take his player option. It's time to move on. And Cameron Payne has been in a suit for the latter part of the regular season and the playoffs because it's come out that Fred Hoiberg has gone against the front office and he wants the win, so he's not going to play. He's not going to play Cameron Payne. But
Right.
we cannot lose the Taj Gibson trade and the Doug McDermott trade. So you got to get rid of Rondo and you got to see what the young guys can do. You got to give Cameron Payne solid minutes. You got to get him in the off season with the veterans and start working. So yeah, I don't hope I Rondo is not back because of his playoff play. But going back to his playoff play, there were guys saying on the Celtics that Rondo knew the plays and Rondo knew the calls. And I wasn't too shocked by that because Rondo, he watches so much film. I mean, he talks about it. The media guys talk about it. So, and he's a leader. He's a leader on the floor. And, it's hard for him to do a lot on the bench right now. So, yeah, it really does hurt the Bulls. And especially, in the offensive, he wasn't much of a defender. But the offensive side, it's the ball last night was stagnant. There's not a lot of ball movement. He's not find, you know, no one was no one's finding the open guys like Rondo does. The driving kick.
Yep.
So it really did hurt the Bulls' chances. And I don't think they led last night. They got down early. It was 14-4, and I think the most they cut it back was 6.
It was a one-point game for a brief moment, but it really didn't last. It seemed like every time the Bulls went on a run to get close, then Boston would answer with 10 more unanswered points.
The close had to be in the early going. I remember there was a lot of Bulls. There was a lot of Bulls runs, but then that was, again, when they were down like 20 or 15. So they were getting close, and they could never finish it off because it seemed like the Celtics just didn't miss any of their shots. I mean, Avery Bradley finally found a stroke from outside. Horford was hitting some threes, and I mean, he was just exposing Lopez on the perimeter. Lopez is not a good perimeter defender. And
yeah, exactly.
And what was amazing, too, was Isaiah Thomas had 16. And I remember he was out a lot of the fourth quarter, I believe, or the second half. You know, the Celtics were doing it without him. They were doing it with Rozier. Rozier had 11 off the bench. Marcus Smart had 7 off the bench. I always like the plus minuses. It's always an interesting stat. Terry Rozier had a plus of 19.
Yeah.
Crowder had a plus of 23. So the Bulls got outplayed up and down the floor. And to finish up the Bulls segment here, I think Valentine should get a run, either at the point guard position or some way, shape, or form on the floor. And MCW should be your starting point guard because he is the best defensive point guard we have, and he would match up really well against Isaiah Thomas. So those are my lineup changes I would like to see, and then just an overall better effort from the Bulls. They just can't get down early, and Jimmy Butler has to get going. Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, there were some moments last night where I was just going, Jimmy, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, that's going in the third quarter, he had 2 points. And he had all his buddies there too. He had Demaryius Thomas courtside and Chance the Rapper courtside. So, I mean, he wasn't playing for his buddies either.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I mean,
we'll see what happens. Game 4, Sunday, tomorrow 5:30 at the United Center. I'm still sticking with my Bulls in 6. Alex, what did you have before the series started? What was your prediction?
Before the series started. I said Celtics in 6. Right now, I might say Celtics in 7. I just think losing Rondo was so tough.
Yeah.
Now, when they won game 2, I was thinking Bulls in 6. But then Rondo has, the injury, so that changes things.
I'm still going to go with Bulls in 6 because if you can get good minutes out of Michael Carter-Williams, and if I think it'd be a huge positive if Hoiberg does not go back to Jerry and Grant. I really don't want to see any more of him. He had 4 turnovers in the first quarter.
Yeah, no.
He was on a short leash for the rest of the game. So, up again, game 4 is tomorrow at 5:30. It'd be something if the Bulls go up 3-1. It would just say that, that Jimmy and Wade were the leaders out there, and let's see if they can get this team back on the right path.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so next we're going to want to transition to the Cubs, and I believe the Cubs are still playing right now.
Yes, they are. Jason Hayward just with another hit and another RBI. It's 12-6 in the top of the ninth.
Jason Hayward having a big day. He is 2-for-4, 4 RBIs. He's got a homer, which was what Alex was telling me in the pre-show was just a bomb.
Yeah, it was an absolute bomb.
Which is just good to see from Hayward, considering all the work he's put in his swing in the off season. So, first point for the Cubs here we got is we were talking about how there's a lot of people talking about the bullpen and should we panic about the bullpen? There's a lot of guys struggling, Justin Grimm and Mike Montgomery have pretty high ERAs right now. Pedro Strop. Alex, what do you think? Do we need to panic on the bullpen yet?
Absolutely not. I think a lot of people are overreacting from the series against Pittsburgh. That's when everyone got hit hard. That's when things just didn't go right. You know what? Series like that will happen. Yes, Justin Grimm has been very bad this year. Yeah, Mike Montgomery is not where we want him to be. But Wade Davis has been absolutely lights out the closer spot. Hector Rondon, after having a really rough spring in WBC, has been lights out. Koji Uehara had one bad game in Pittsburgh. Everything else has been lights out. C.J. Edwards Jr. might be the most dominant person in that bullpen right now. Now, Pedro Strop has struggled early on, but he's starting to kind of get it together his past few outings. So I'm really not too worried about this bullpen. It had 15 and two-thirds scoreless innings until Grimm gave up a home run in this game in garbage time. So, you know, it just goes to show, don't let one game or a string of games completely derail everything. I think the Cubs bullpen overall this season has been great, outside of a few ugly performances. But those are going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. And I like that the stat. What was it? You said 15 and a half scoreless innings before Grimm just gave up the run. Yeah, that's a huge boost right there to the confidence, and just that the overall that I mean right there is why you should not panic. And
yeah,
I've really liked what I've seen out of Carl Edwards. Wade Davis, who struggled in the spring. Everyone's like, is he going to come out that way for the regular season? You know, is he going to start slow? And his ERA right now is zero.
Yep.
And he's got four saves, two wins, nine strikeouts, and arguably one of the best closers in baseball. So it's been fun to watch
Absolutely.
Him. And Rondon, tough baseball classic, tough spring training, but he's proven he's going to be one of the top guys. And, you know, I think another reason everyone is panicking is because just the amount of guys that Madden's sending out there. You know, he doesn't have the set bullpen rotation, as you would call it. So it just seemed, you know, he's trying everybody out and seeing who he's going to stick with, you know, post All-Star break, and who, you know, soon enough we will know the defined role of everybody in that bullpen.
Yep. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you kind of know where some people are going to be. Like, obviously, you know, Wade Davis is going to be the closer, but you kind of have a setup man by committee. And sometimes it just takes trial and error. And when it's this early in the season, it's really the time to do it, because it's really hard to do that in spring training, because spring training games are not regular season baseball games. So this is the perfect time to do it.
Yeah. And then there was another panic situation of when the Cubs started slow. You know, they were losing some games, I think. Were they at one point, like 6-7? And
yeah.
I think it was John Lackey or somebody said, like, you know, if this was a random 13-game set in the middle of the season, it wouldn't have as much attention. It's just that it's the start of the season, and everyone's saying, do we panic yet? Is this the Cubs of old? Are they going to be able to get back on track? Well, I mean, you're still getting your feet wet. You know, it's just the start of the season, and this is when you're defining roles, you're getting going, and so there's no time to panic on that. And no, the Cubs are getting it going. I mean, look at the score today. I mean, so there's no reason to panic on the hitting, the bullpen, or the pitching, because it's still early in the season, and the Cubs are now first place in the NL Central. So there you go.
Exactly.
Next point is Kyle Hendricks. We still have not seen a Kyle Hendricks, Cy Young performance out of what we saw last year. Just going to his stat line right now, he is 1-1 with an ERA of 6.19 in 16 innings of work. He's given up four home runs, which is huge. I think that's one of the biggest things right there.
Yeah.
He gave up I think it was three or four home runs last season. So he's already matched it or gone over the total. And that's just something that we don't see from Hendricks. What do you think Hendricks has to do to get back on track?
Well, I think there's a lot of talk about his arm right now. There are some people saying that he's got kind of a dead arm right now because his velocity is noticeably down, and everyone's been really making note of that. So it might just be kind of a physical ailment for him right now. Maybe he just needs to regroup and get it together. Also, sometimes with pitchers like that, you see them get off to slow starts in the early season. So it could be a combination of a few things. So if he just kind of regains everything in his arm, kind of goes along in the season, grinds it out, I think he'll be okay. Because we've seen times and times and times where he's dotting the corners. He's got his stuff, but, you know, I feel like he hasn't been getting the calls this year. I think that's going to change. I think it all evens out in the end. But there have been numerous times where Hendricks has placed the ball perfectly on the corner, but he hasn't gotten the call from the umpire. And I'm not making excuses for him, because he's still hanging some pitches flat over the plate, and you can't do that. So I just think there's just a few growing pains and nagging things that are just going to work themselves out. You just got to be patient with it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you said like his arm, I mean, it might be a little dead from spring. You know, I could have overpitched him there, but
yeah,
maybe you mean to give him a start off, or do you just let him keep going, let him get his feet wet and just, you know, find it out for himself. I think we can relate this back to John Lester. You know, John Lester, he didn't start his Cubs career off like many hoped.
Right.
He eventually got it going and he got another ring on his finger. So, you know, it just takes time with some guys. And, you know, Hendricks, I mean, he just pitched. And I think, you know, it could be rollover from last year. He just pitched so much last year. Sorry. It was the biggest workload of his career to that point. And plus the heavy spring, he's just gotta settle down. And the more he works with, the catchers, and the more he works with the staff, I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not too worried.
No. What are your thoughts on Brett Anderson so far? I know Brett Anderson has had a lot of injury history, and it was really up in the air putting him in the rotation. I would have thought Mike Montgomery would be in the rotation to start the year, but we see Brett Anderson, and I know if he stays healthy and he's on his stuff, he can be very productive for the Cubs, but we haven't seen too much of his dominant stuff of what he used to have. What are your thoughts on Anderson so far in the rotation?
You know, I think it made sense when they put him in the rotation over Montgomery, veteran guy, a little more experience in that. So I'm not surprised that they did. As for his pitching, his first game in Milwaukee was really good. Like, that was really, really good.
Yeah, that
his
was
second
good.
Game against, yeah, wasn't it? Yeah. His second game against the Dodgers, he threw like 5 shutout innings, but those 5 shutout innings were like ball after ball, scolded either a really nice catch by Almora or right at someone. So it was kind of a got lucky start. And then in the start before his last start really wasn't good. I know he's been injured a lot and it's going to be kind of up and down for him, but you know, he's a 5th starter, and if things don't work out, you can put Montgomery or, you know, do something else in there. So I don't really stress out about Brett Anderson that much, but it's kind of hard to evaluate at this point really what he is, but you see the potential of being a good 5th starter. So the potential is there. I'll say that.
Yeah, exactly. I like what you said about you cannot evaluate yet at this point. We're only 16 games into the season. You know, let's get a couple more starts under the belt. You know, if he really starts to struggle, then Joe Madden will make some fixes. But yeah, the shutout innings you said against the Dodgers, and he's had some good outings. So I know I haven't. You know, I'm not petitioning yet to get him out of the rotation. I mean, if there's one guy I'm worried about, it'd be Kyle Hendricks. But we just talked about how he's going to fix it. So, yeah, I'm not too worried about Brett Anderson. And if you put Brett Anderson in the rotation, that leaves Mike Montgomery as, I mean, you're right. I mean, the guy right away, first guy out of the bullpen, because he is like almost – he's like the next starter up. So, I mean, he can go the good, 2, 3, 4 innings if need be. So I like that we have a strong guy like him, a potential starter in the bullpen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another thing we're talking about in the pre-show was Javier Baez, and his average right now is .217. He's got a homer, 4 RBIs, and his OBP is under .300. We've seen some great stuff from Javier Baez, and we've seen some stuff from his rookie year, Javier Baez, that we hope had been gone, but some of it is coming back. Alex, what do you see with Javier Baez that you don't want to see that hopefully will play itself out in the coming weeks?
I'm seeing a lot of those ugly 2014 like swings. He struck out like 3 more times again today. He's chasing pitches out of the zone in a way. He's swinging at literally everything. Yesterday he had a great game. He had a home run and a double. Like, he looked great yesterday, but today has been what you see a lot more from Javi this year so far, and a lot of the swing and missing and striking out at breaking balls way out of the zone. I am confident that he's going to work out of it, but they need to work on that sooner than later, because we know how good he is. We know what he's done in the past. I mean, it just it looks like I'm watching Javi again from 2014, and you don't want that to keep up. And I think with his talent level and the added experience he has, it's going to work himself out, but it might be a nagging journey to that.
Yeah, it could be. But again, we're always looking back too. We cannot evaluate yet. We cannot panic yet. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff of that is discipline, you know, just chasing balls outside of the zone. I know he wants to be an impact player. He wants to show that he, you know, he can be that monster at the plate that opposing pitchers do fear. So I think he's got to settle down and start taking the Schwarber approach at the leadoff spot. Schwarber today had two more walks. I think it's just been great what Schwarber's put in the leadoff spot. You know, going back to when the thoughts of Schwarber in the leadoff spot, I'm like, Schwarber's not the Dexter Fowler. Schwarber's not the Ben Zobrist, the guy who has the high OPP and who's going to get on base for you. You know, he's not the Hugo Weigel kind of guy, but so far he has been the Hugo Weigel kind of guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the patience at the plate. It's unreal.
It is, especially from a guy like Schwarber who, you know, wants to hit more balls on the Budweiser sign over there in the outfield again. So
mm-hmm.
it's been good to see. And another thing good to see is Jason Hayward. The swing's finally coming around, and we're finally seeing the Atlanta Braves days. And it's just great to see that.
Absolutely. And you're rooting so hard for the guy who is a key part of winning the World Series in the speech, and you see what a great guy and what a great teammate he is, and you just root for him in everything he does. And seeing him play well on both sides of the spectrum, hitting and defense, it makes you really happy. It just does.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, there was times last year where, and he was just, I mean, he did awful. He didn't do good at all at the plate last year. And
right.
You know, there was one point where I said, you know what, I'm going to forget about the plate this year. You know, I just want him to play, you know, I just want him to be lights out in the outfield. And he was.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also a leader. You know, he was a leader in the clubhouse. He was a leader in the rain delay. So, but now, you know, he's doing all three phases, not just two. So, which is really good to see. He's averaging 300 on the dot, two homers, 10 RBIs, and he's got a 354 OBP. He's up RBIs. He's got to be up there with Russell. Russell also is having a good start to the season. He had the walk off the other day, and he's in a. I mean, Russell's in a really good spot in the batting order. That you know, he's going to be able to get those guys in, and I think he's going to have another high RBI total for this season.
I think so too. I absolutely think so. You're seeing just the approach of what he takes. You're seeing just how different you think he feels at the plate, because he describes how good he feels, and obviously you can't feel physically what he feels, but the way you watch him in the box, he just looks so much more comfortable.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that attributes to him and everybody about that they're not on this World Series hangover, that they want more.
Right.
They're hungry for more.
Absolutely.
It's like, it's like on their rings, we never quit. You know, I remember when they came back the other day, that was like Joe Maddon's first thing in the clubhouse is, it's on the rings, we never quit. So.
Yep.
We're not going to go out, no matter if it's, you know, if it's some scrap game in the middle of the season or if it's right now, you know, if it's in the World Series, we're not going to quit. So the Cubs are still the bottom of the ninth. Cubs up 12-6.
12-7 now. Votto hit a double, but there's two outs.
Okay, so the Cubs should come away with a win and keep the lead in the NL Central. More Chicago news today in Chicago sports was Stan Bowman took to the podium today, and it was not a pleasant Bowman. I have not seen this side of Bowman because the Hawks have been doing so good. He said stuff from his heart and stuff that had to be said. And I mean, it took me back a little bit because I didn't know that he could go down this dark alley, but I mean, it had to be said. You know, Coach Quenneville, you can just tell by his demeanor that he's upset, but stuff like this, I don't think he would ever say.
Yeah, it was, you know, like you said, we've never seen this side of him before because there really hasn't been much of a reason. But, I mean, wow. He was really angry today.
So some of the stuff he said, I'm going to read some of the clips here. And, I mean, it is just – it's deep stuff. Standing here April 22nd is not the way we expected our season to end. and it's a complete failure when you measure it against the expectations that we had of ourselves. There's no doubt about it. I'm going to take a look at things. I can promise you we will be better. Top from bottom, we need more. This is unacceptable to where we are today. There will be changes moving forward. Changes come in many different ways. He said, and I think it's time right now to take a look in the mirror and face the facts. And when you do that, you look at accountability. And that starts with me. I need to be better. I like that he calls out the team, which was needed, and he talks about himself. So he goes full circle. And he ends it with, you know, Joe Klenville's our coach. I there was no question about that. I mean, there's no way Q's leaving after two first-round exits. He's just done so much, and he's the guy here. And he said, and Joel and I are going to work together to make sure this never happens again. Then he opened it up for questions. So things needed from Stan Bowman. It was a dark opening to the locker cleanout at the United Center. But it's what had to be said. What were your direct thoughts, and what do you take away from his little mini speech here going into the Blackhawks offseason?
I think it was much needed. I think that they really needed to say that. I think it shows that Stan Bowman isn't at a satisfactory level. I think it shows that Stan Bowman wants to keep winning and that he's not just going to live in the nostalgia of three cups that they've had the past decade. He wants to keep doing it. He wants to keep being the best of the best. And, you know, sometimes when something big like this happens, you need a little ripping into, and that's what he did. He ripped into himself. He ripped into the team. He ripped into the whole situation. And that shows me Stan Bowman truly does care about winning in the future and now, despite what happened in the past. And I applaud him for that.
Yeah, I do too. It was a dark, dark speech, but there's many positives to come out of it, showing that he takes fault, disappointed that, you know, we're a historic franchise with all these Hall of Famers. And in this recent decade, we have been one of the most dominant NHL teams, and we're not going to fall off the face of the map. We're going to get back to work. We're still going to be the dominant Blackhawks that, you know, every team, you know, is afraid of come playoff time. So it's back to work for the Blackhawks, and season of the NHL is coming up in June, and that also means the expansion draft. So the rules for the expansion draft is you can keep seven players, forward and defense, along with one goalie. So when you map it out, you're going to keep the core together. You're going to keep Toews together. You're going to keep Kane.
Yep.
You're going to keep Hossa. You're going to keep Keith, Siebes. This is just my list. So I got Toews, Kane, Hossa. That's three. Keith, Seabrook, Hammer, and Panarin. So there's one, two, three,
you,
four,
you have
five.
Your definites there.
Yeah, there's your seven with your goalie as Corey. But
right.
What's your take, Alex? Do you think, again, Bowman said changes are coming, but changes could be in many different ways. It could be from the roster to the coaching staff to maybe the front office. You don't know what changes are coming. So you got to list the seven here with your goalie. Do you think the Blackhawks will explore trading Corey Crawford this offseason?
I think they'll maybe consider it. Maybe they'll think about it. But in the end, I don't see it happening. I just don't. I think he's too big of an asset on this team.
Yeah, and all these rumors stirring that, you know, about this comes from that the Blackhawks got swept. And I have put, you know, little to no blame on Corey Crawford for this entire Nashville series because he just had no help. The Hawks scored three goals in four games. The defense was not there, and the Hawks didn't have it. And I think a lot of it goes back to the end of the regular season where they weren't really competing. You know, he's giving guys rest, sure, but you still got to go out there and have the fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, you know, he knows the scenarios. He knows what has to be done. But I think it's a matter of how it's going to be done is what is going to need a lot of work. And I think he's got to at least entertain every possible way that it can get to where he wants to be. If that means considering a trade here, a signing here. You know, I think there's not going to be a lot of big, huge trades with the core. I think there's going to at least be exploration.
I agree. There's going to be a lot of exploration. I think that when I think of guys that could be shipped out, I would like to look at Corey Crawford. Could you trade Crawford? Could you get a big haul in return because you have Scott Darling, who was phenomenal this season and has the history, has the playoff history. He's been in the playoffs, and he was a big part of it. So you got Scott Darling there. So you could possibly ship out Crawford. The next guy I could see, Owen said he would not ignore the core, so-called core, and he would dive into the core. So the first guy out of the core I'd see leaving would be Brent Seabrook. I think Brent Seabrook has not been the guy who we've had in the past.
It's a shadow of his, a shell of his former self.
Yeah. I mean, Duncan Keith wasn't himself during the playoffs, but I think he's been, again, one of the most consistent Hawks since he started here. So I think you look at Brent Seabrook because of his contract. You know, everyone talks about his contract being a problem because it's just so large for him. And, you know, the production hasn't been there. And especially with Panarin. Panarin tied for, he had to get the bonus was for, I think he was like tied for 10th in points among forwards or something like that. But he is getting the bonus. So that will be toward the cap hit. So,
unfortunately for our management.
Unfortunate for the management, but good for Panarin. You know, he earned it. He really did. And it wasn't good to see that he was non-existent in the playoffs. But I think the two guys that if I would say I would see going or wouldn't be that upset about going would be Corey Crawford and Brent Seabrook. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Brent Seabrook is kind of the biggest one that's going to be talked about because of the size of the contract, because of the performance the past year or two, because of the cap situation. I think that's the one that's going to be talked about a lot because I have this feeling that Scott Darling is going to be really targeted by Las Vegas, and you're going to have to keep one of those guys. And I think with the experience and I think with the track record and the consistency, I think Corey Crawford is the one they'd want to keep.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think right on the dot. I think that Vegas would love Scott Darling to be their first goalie of their franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. Think about it. Like it fits everything.
It does. So there's changes. So Bellman's going on the changes, and I think changes are. It's obviously going to be a lot of changes in the roster because of the expansion draft. So you got your guys locked up. So guys that you know could not be back next year. You got. You know, the guys that aren't protected, Artemi Anisimov. I think Panic, Richard Panik. There's some guys that are they're on like a non-movable clause, and there's I think there was a few guys who are not on the there's a no trade clause. But
yeah,
you know,
a lot of those deals have no trade clauses. A lot of the core, I mean, pretty much the core is full of no trade clauses.
Yeah,
so
no.
That makes things a lot more difficult.
Uh-huh. So yeah, we got the core, that's for sure. But you know, guys, you could see going, Anisimov, Kruger, Panik would be huge if we lost him because he just did so well next to Taze on the top line. And you know, during Taze's tenure, like he's always been flirting with guys who's going to be on the top line with him. And I think. Finally, we found Panic as the guy on the top line who can skate with Taze. So that would be huge if he doesn't come back. I would have him back. And then you look at the defense. You know, you got Keith and Seabrook. You got three defensemen locked up, Keith, Seabrook, and Nicholas Hjalmarsson. But after that, who do you got? You got Kempney. You know, the Hawks brought Kempney over. He got some time, you know, the regular season. He was on and off. But, you know, they're high on him. I don't know what's in store for Trevor Van Riemsdyk's future. You know, he's had good games and bad games. He's won me over, and then all of a sudden, in the next day, I'm like, let's trade the guy. Brian Campbell said today that he is Blackhawks or retirement next season. I'm not really sure how I feel on Brian Campbell. I liked when they brought him back. That was a good move. But, you know, he didn't have the numbers he put up. He didn't have the production that he put up when he was with the Hawks last time.
I just don't think he can physically keep up with it anymore. I think he's done.
Johnny Oduya. I like the move by Bowman, bringing back guys that know the system, work with the guys, won in the cup with them. So, but Bowman was just Oduya was just a rental player. He's not coming back next year.
Right.
So, right on the defensive end, the Hawks got to start doing what they did with the forwards, bringing up the Hartman and the Schmaltz. They got to start putting these young guys in. And I liked Hartman, Schmaltz, Hinostroza, and John Hayden. When John Hayden came over to the Hawks, that was a great boost. I liked him a lot. So we're going to see a lot more of him next year. You know, of the Alex DeBrincat over in the Erie Oilers.
Stud prospect.
You've heard of him. He had 65 goals and 62 assists in this season. And I think he's had like 10 or 12 in the postseason.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's pretty
this
good.
This guy sounds like he's Kaner like on steroids. I mean, it is insane what he's been able to do. And I think he joins the team next year. So there you go. You still got your core intact. There's going to be a lot of these young guys coming in.
Yeah, you know, this was kind of a transition year. They kind of pulled the 50 wins out of their ass, frankly. So I think it's fair to say that this Hawks team, the record looked better than they actually were. And Patrick Kane even admitted that. So if you're going to be working on a transition phase, but knowing that you have a lot of talent for the future, it's good to have.
Yeah, he did hit on that, you know, talking about how, you know, we had a lot of one-goal games. We had a lot of one-goal games. And, you know, a lot of other wins that, you know, we maybe didn't have the business of being in. But, again, they won 50 games. Last time they won 50 games, they were cup champions. So, and you know, you can talk a lot of it on the young guys and experience in the playoffs. You know, I remember Mark Labs talking about how Ryan Hartman, after game four, he had a black eye. He was limping around. You know, he just got physically beat up. So, I mean, that's going to happen. That's hockey. But I was shocked to see I thought, you know, the Hawks, their chances were slim after going down 3-0, but I know the Hawks, you know, Jonathan Toews, you know, said, you know, this is the NHL playoffs. You're going to have adversity. You know, this is hopefully the beginning of the road for us. But it wasn't. And, going into game four, I'm like, the Hawks are not going to get swept. You know, if anything we know about this Hawks team is, they're not going to get swept. You know, they're going to push it. But, you know, obviously it didn't happen, and now we're on the outside looking in. You know, it's early in the postseason. You know, we're not playing until June. So it's not good to see that from the Hawks.
Yeah, it's sad. It really is. And this was, despite what you thought of the Hawks team this year going to the playoffs, we didn't expect this. Historically bad. Outscored 13-3. In a playoff series, a sweep.
No.
We certainly did not expect this.
No. And I like to talk about how, you know, the end of the season, you know, meaningless games. And, you know, everyone in the media and all the big Hawks fans are saying these games are meaningless. You know, who cares if they lost 5-1 or, you know, lost by a goal or didn't put on the show when they want. They're meaningless games. But in the big picture, you can look back at those, say, you know, the Hawks were just lackadaisical. You know, they were just getting through the regular season. Where the Predators were, what, they were in the Western Conference, the 2 wild card seed?
Yep.
Yeah, so they had to fight the way in the playoffs, and they kept that fight going this series, and the Hawks never got on their rhythm. And
you also got to remember that the Predators were favored before the season started by many, and they dealt with a lot of injuries, and they finally got it back together.
So, talking about the Predators, they were favored. Do you think that they can make a long run to the Cup?
Next year? Or, the Predators. I think they can make it to the Western Conference Finals. I don't see them winning the Cup. Frankly, right now, I see the Cup coming out of the East. There are so many powerhouses in the East. And I think the Predators can make a really good run, but I just don't know if they're going to win the Stanley Cup.
Before the series, I mean, I was like, if the Predators are going to pull this out, it's got to be vintage Pecorine. And it was.
Yeah.
It was Pecorine on his game. So, I mean, he could single-handedly carry them to the Cup, I think, you know, if he keeps playing as well. And, I mean, the Predators' top line is just – I mean, it was better than the Hawks. I mean, they have a great top line, and they have – you know, they got a pretty solid roster all the way down. So we'll see how far that gets them. But, Yeah, I think you're right. I think the cup could come out of the coming out of the East this year. So last thing on the Hawks, NHL draft is coming. It's going to be coming up before you know it. The Hawks, they had to give, I think they gave away one or two picks at the deadline in the Oduya. I think they gave away one or something. They gave away a pick. I know they were stacking up picks prior because, you know, they want to get a lot of picks for their hometown and just get a lot of picks in general. But when you look at the NHL draft, you know, I really haven't studied the prospects yet or where the Hawks are going to be in place to get top prospects. But I would think that the defenseman would be the biggest need and the biggest focus point in the draft. What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Because the patchwork of just old veteran defensive guys, it's not going to cut it. With the way the game is changing and the way it relies so much on speed, you can't have just a bunch of old, slow defensemen out there and expect to go far. It's just not going to do it.
No, yeah. And it's like, yeah, they got so many young winners. You know, they got Hartman, Schmaltz, Hinostroza. They got DeBrincat, who maybe will join the team next season. They got Hayden. So they have all these young forwards, all these young wings.
Right, it's all in the forwards.
You look down at the defensemen, and it just you don't have the depth. What do you have? You have what? Forsling, he's there.
Yep.
Kempe, there's again high on Kempe, so we'll see what he does next year. And after that, you really don't got a lot of no-name guys like you did with the forwards down in the minor leagues. So
no,
you got to keep drafting there because again, every year Keith and Seabrook get a year older and. You gotta have a new core at some point.
Yep.
All right. So this time we're gonna bring in Michael Gibbons. We're gonna talk some Bears. Alex is gonna stay on, talk some Bears with us. We're gonna talk about the NFL draft. Just days away. It's next Thursday, first round of the NFL draft. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see what holds for the future of the Bears and what they pick. And we'll talk. Are the Bears gonna go QB at three? Will they trade down for a quarterback? And other roster moves that we could see post-draft and what other position needs are in the draft. Hello, Michael. You there?
Okay.
Hey, Michael. How's it going?
Good.
So
right off the bat, no. The Bears can draft a QB at number three. They just can't. They're no surefire prospect. In this draft, the pile at number three. I mean, there's no consensus on quarterback. Everyone says the Browns are in love with Mitch Trubisky. Nobody's clamoring to come up and get him. I know everyone's talking. I mean, now Mahomes is a hot name, and he could somehow go from a fourth or fifth round pick to a top pick. I think a lot of this is just nervous GMs and just draft chatter. I think we could be in for a year like, you know, when Mike Vick got drafted, he was the lone quarterback in that first round. I would not be surprised if there's only one quarterback drafted in round one. But I also, it wouldn't surprise me either if we had like a three draft where all of a sudden five quarterbacks get drafted because these teams that are in need are all drafted.
So you think even if Ryan
– Yo, Thomas, can you put me on a second?
As his quarterback. Yeah. Are you still there? Seems like – oh, Alex had to ditch off. He had to take care of something. So what Michael was
– I'm here for another minute.
Oh, Alex. Okay.
Yeah, I have to go in like
yeah,
a minute.
Yeah, so Michael
but...
was just saying – Yeah, so just, yeah, close it out here with one more. I got one more question for you. So what Michael was saying was how the Bears shouldn't go QB at three. You know, there's no surefire guy. But, you know, everyone's talking, you know, and Ryan Pace, you know, if he has his guy, you would think he would have to go and get him at three. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of thoughts on that because the quarterbacks in this draft, there's a lot of red flags that don't really make anyone a surefire no-miss kind of guy where it's a lot of that is in the defensive guys like Jamal Adams and people like that. But if Pace has a plan and he sees something, I guess he'll go after his guy. My question is, what is his guy? Because I've heard so many different things. Does he want to go defensive? Does he want to go quarterback? There's a lot of conflicting rumors right now. So, I mean, right now, I'm just not convinced they're going to go after a quarterback in the first round. But, you know, I don't know for sure. I think they might want to go with the surefire, best available, can't miss prospect.
Yeah, and that's what NFL draft season is, rumor mills. There's so many rumors going out there, and last week, apparently the Bears QB1 on the board is Patrick Mahomes, and I wouldn't be against that. I like Patrick Mahomes, but you don't take him at 3. That's for sure. But I mean, if you like Deshaun Watson, you take him at 3. If you like Trubisky, you would take him at 3, because those are the top two prospects. So yeah, Pat Mahomes. Yeah, if you're going to take Pat Mahomes, you don't take him at 3. So going back to what Michael said, yeah, if there's no surefire guy, then you know you don't go QB at 3. You trade back in the draft, or you get the top guy available, or you get a defensive end, you get a secondary player at 3, and then you trade back into the first round using a second round pick. I've been all for. I'm behind Ryan Pace. You know, if Ryan Pace has a plan, then I'm all in on it. And if he has his QB, I mean, I'd be willing for him to take him at 3. The Bears have been keeping quiet on the QB front with Deshaun Watson. We've known that they've met with Mahomes. We've known they met with Kaiser, Trubisky. But there hasn't been a lot on them meeting with Deshaun Watson. We know they met with him at the combine, but there really hasn't been a lot of talk on, you know, with them meeting up with them. There was a rumor that they met with them on a phone call, but that's different than meeting face to face. So are they keeping it quiet because they don't want to let out who their guy is? Are they keeping it quiet to lure from another guy that they might want to take? I don't know. The NFL draft is almost here, and we'll find out sooner enough. But an interesting report I saw today is the Cleveland Browns are still split up at the front office. They're between the front office, the front office, and the head coach Hugh Jackson on who to take at number one. And the front office wants Mitch Trubisky out of UNC, and Hugh Jackson and Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator, want Myles Garrett. And that makes a lot of sense. Of course, Myles Garrett. He seems to be the surefire number one pick in this draft. Because of his talent, his speed, you know, his speed off the edge. And he's just a freak athletically, his strength, speed, versatility. You know, he seems like a surefire guy, and why would you pass on him? No, but if you feel that Mitch Trubisky is your franchise quarterback, then you go out and get him. But then again, you look at it, you're like, we can get a Myles Garrett at number one. You know, the Browns do hold the first and 12th pick in the first round of the 2017 NFL draft. But if they feel that Mitch Trubisky is their guy, they're going to go out and get him. So we can let's play the, you know, hypotheticals and say that Trubisky goes one. The 49ers have been reported that they're high on Deshaun Watson. You know, there's a lot of the rumors that he can't take heart to heart. And some of the rumors you could, you know, if, you know, backed up with a lot of stuff, that it could really be a possibility. But it's NFL draft time, and it's NFL draft week. There's going to be a lot of stuff flowing around. And it's important not to take a lot of stuff literal. It's a lot of rumors. You need to wait till draft day to see what the for sure thing is. You know, it'd be crazy it'd be a really dream come true for Bears fans and Ryan Pace. I mean, if the top two picks are quarterbacks and all of a sudden Myles Garrett falls into your lap at 3. I mean, the Bears do need a pass rusher. You know, they do need a quarterback as much as anything. You know, they need a guy. They need a guy they can put in their system who they can develop and be their potential franchise QB. Because Jay Cutler didn't work out to be that. But when you look at the Bears pass rushers, you got Leonard Floyd, who showed flashes last year, and I think the Bears think a big year two out of him. You got Pernell McPhee, has an injury history, but last year he showed some sparks of his old Raven self. So I hope he can be healthy this season. He's I think they said he lost 15 pounds, so he's a little faster, a little thinner. Hopefully, in the gut, you want a lot of muscle on him for sure. Willie Young, he's had some injury history, but, the Bears are high on him. That's why they re-signed him. They like him a lot. Lamar Houston, Brad Biggs, the Chicago Tribune said the other day on 670, I believe, that the Bears might release Lamar Houston, along with Eddie Royal, who is expected to be released soon. Could be before a draft, could be after, but I don't think those guys will be on the roster come OT training camp. So the Bears obviously do need a pass rusher. And if Myles Garrett falls to them, you're taking them. You're obviously going to take Myles Garrett. That'd be a huge spot in the roster. So there you go. You pick a QB. And like Michael said, you know, you either all this draft chatter, you get one QB in the first round, or five QBs go in the first round. No, you really don't know until draft day. You know, it's always a big question mark until you hear the commissioner come up with every pick. Next Bears talking point, will they trade down? The Bears could trade down from 3. There was something out today on Twitter. I saw that, if Myles Garrett fell to the Bears at 3, the stuff they could get in return, the picks, whatever, the haul they could get in return at number 3, if someone were to trade, there's going to be calls. If Myles Garrett were to fall 3, everyone is going to be on the phone in Chicago, you know, seeing what they could get for Myles Garrett. I mean, personally, I would not give away Myles Garrett, but it depends. I mean, you got the Cleveland Browns on the phone, 12th pick along with all these other picks in the NFL draft and the future picks they have. It'd be a crazy scenario. It seems like a long shot right now, but if everything plays out like it could, you know, if the 1-2 guys are quarterbacks, then you do have the possibility of Myles Garrett falling to the Bears at 3, and you could get the haul for him in return. But let's say the Bears don't go QB at 3. So Myles Garrett doesn't fall, Bears don't go QB at 3. Who do I want and who would make a lot of sense for the Bears at 3? Of course, there's Jamal Adams from LSU. I've liked Jamal Adams since January when I really started keying in on NFL draft prospects. And, he just jumps out on the tape. His aggressiveness in the run game, his ball skills. You know, he only had one interception last year, but you can train him in the system and a lot of stuff like that where it won't be that big of a problem going forward. Sorry about that. Yeah, so Jamal Adams would be, he's almost a guy you can't pass up. He told someone the other day that he was in for a meeting with the New York Jets. The Jets sit at 6 in the draft. And the Jets front office literally told him straight up, what are you doing here? You're not going to be on the board at 6. There's no way you fall that far. Because say the Bears don't get him, you got Jacksonville and Tennessee at the 4 or 5 slot. And those teams are in need of secondary players too. So Jamal Adams is a top 5 pick. It just depends. Is he going to go 3, 4, or 5? I would really like the Bears to add him. You know, I know they added Quinton Demps. I know they're moving DeAndre Hall to safety. And it might look like a crowded room right now. But just Jamal Adams, the physicality he brings, the ball skills, his speed. You know, he improved his 40 time from the combine to the pro day. And that speaks a lot. And just the culture he would change on the defensive side of the football. And he's a leader. You know, his college coaches praise him that he was the leader in that locker room, and he's been a leader all his life. And, you know, he's out there playing safety. He's part of the leader of that defense. And it'd be something the Bears need. The Bears need an impact safety because the past couple of years they've been going through a lot of safeties. Adrian Amos, Harold Jones, Corte, those guys have not produced the takeaways as they should. The Bears have been terrible in the takeaway department, and Jamal Adams, with his range, his speed, his physicality, would be a huge upgrade to the secondary and put the Bears in a good position going in next season with a much improved secondary from what it was in the past year and for a while now. So he's obviously, Jamal Adams, a choice of 3. Another person at three would be Solomon Thomas, D-end out of Stanford. I like Solomon Thomas. I wouldn't mind if the Bears get him either. Again, you can never have enough pass rushers. That's something NFL teams say. That's something that the media says. Something we all say. You can never have enough pass rushers on your team because, look at the Bears. You get Leonard Floyd hurt last year. You got Pernell McPhee hurt last year, and you're down to the low guys on the depth chart, man. You need the depth, and it's always important to have depth there at the pass rush position. You know, it's so important. It's a passing league, and you gotta get to the quarterback. You got to, and that'd be a big upgrade for the Bears if they can get, you know, if they would be able to get Solomon Thomas at three. There's one guy who, you know, is there in a lot of mock drafts that I do not want to see the Bears get, and that is Jonathan Allen. I'm not sold on Jonathan Allen. You know, I've seen his power, his physicality at Alabama, but I'm not so sure on his shoulders. You know, they say there's signs that his shoulders, you know, arthritis is building up in the shoulders, and where that could be a problem for some teams. It could be not a problem for other teams. Depends on the doctors, you know, look at it and say, oh, he's fine. You know, this might be a red flag. I'm not sold on him. I think the Bears could do much better at three with the Solomon Thomas pick or the Jamal Adams pick or the quarterback position. If Ryan Pace has his guy, then you're going to get him. You're not waiting. You're not waiting to the second round, or you're not waiting to draft back. You're not waiting to trade back into the first round and get your second or third option. If you have your guy, you go get him. Because it is very important in the third year of John Fox and Ryan Pace that it's go time. You got to start showing improvement. You were 3-13 ball team last season. It wasn't good. It was a sad time in Chicago. A sad time for fans, the team, front office. Everyone's under fire. No, it's a do or die year, and I think the Bears need to show progress with their free signings and their draft. You know, they put together a good draft last year. They really did. You know, they got Leonard Floyd, who showed flashes. You got Cody Whitehair, who can now be, you know, a 10-12 year starter at center for you. And just the amount, it's crazy to see what Whitehair. He was playing guard in preseason. All of a sudden, he gets switched over to center like nothing. And this the impact he had on the O-line, playing in between Josh Sitton and Kyle Long, who I'm sure helped out a lot. But just his impact, it was stellar. It was good. It was good to see second round pick live up to his potential, and he's going to be stable for the O-line for years to come. Jordan Howard, the Bears just got a steal in Jordan Howard. He had just a great rookie year. It was 6-7 games. He was over 100 rushing yards, and he was a monster. You know, he's hitting the hole, and the Bears just ran zone. You know, he was running the zone game. He really was, and it was good to see the Bears use him, and Jordan Howard put himself in that position to, you know, be the Bears running back going forward. Other picks in the draft, you know, DeAndre Hall suffered a really bad ankle injury, put him out for a lot of time. Otherwise, he would have got good reps, and he got in some trouble in the offseason over in Iowa City. He got arrested, but that's all in the past now. You know, the Bears are moving forward from that. They're very disappointed, but they have talked to him, and he is back with the team as he was, as they said. They're going to try him at safety, which I think would be really good for him. He's got his wingspan is just huge. And I've always liked that out of him. That's what, you know, I tell a lot of people I write about a lot, is I just like his wingspan. And he's not the fastest guy in the field, but he's going to get the job done with his wingspan and his aggressiveness. He was a stud tackler back in Northern Iowa. And I really think with more playing time, he can really become a good NFL guy. You know, I don't see starter in him yet. You know, it wasn't a good sample size last season, given the injury. But I could see safety could be a really good fit for him. And they're going to try him there, and we'll see what happens. Other draft picks, you had Miami, you had Deion Bush. Deion Bush, he played some starts last year, but he was on a short leash. There was a lot of time they were going between him and Jones Quarte at their safety position. And it's just going to be a big offseason for him. You know, he's got to learn the system. And the Bears coaches are really high on him. They really think he'd become a good starter in the league. he's just got to learn the system. He's just got to get out there. He's got to keep working. He's got to his range is not what I want it to be. What I want to see from him, he's really aggressive. I mean, he was a stud hitter at Florida, at Miami, which is really good to see. You know, out of the safety with the rod fits. You know, you see like Cam Chancellor, who's going to come up and hit. So you want to see that out of your safety too. You want to see his range and his ball skills and his ability to take away the ball. But you want to see the run support too. He's got the run support. He's going to come up and put his nose in there. He's going to come up and put his nose on the football. But you want to see him excel in the takeaway department coming here too. And I hope to see that he does that. And I think bringing in the veteran leadership of Quentin Demps, you know, he had 6 interceptions last year, Demps for Houston. I think that he's going to really help out that secondary, even though, you know, everyone was kind of up in arms about the move. You know, the Bears want to go young. You want to get younger at the secondary position. But it was a good move, I think, by Pace. I like the move. You know, again, the takeaway numbers stick out to you right away. And the other moves in the secondary, you know, he had a Marcus Cooper from the Cardinals. He had some takeaways last year. Prince Mukamura, that was kind of a weird signing. You know, he didn't have any takeaways last year at Jacksonville. But, you know, he's been a solid corner throughout his NFL career. You know, it's going to be a battle. The corner position is up for grabs right now because Kyle Fuller sat out all last year with the knee scope, with a minor knee scope. He should have been back, and he just sat out. And then Vic Fangio went off of him in a press conference in December, you know, saying he would have that will to come back. So it's an open competition at the secondary. I think it's an open competition all across the board, as always is for NFL teams. But the Bears secondary is going to be up for grabs when they draft rookies. They're going to draft some. I hope they should draft at least one or two secondary players in this year's draft class. They got to keep adding depth. They got to keep adding young guys because you got to build from within. You got to build guys. You got to build guys up from in the system. You got to get guys. You got to get them there to develop. You got to get them to play special teams. You got to have them contribute in some way, shape, or form to eventually be the starter down the road. You know, some guys like Jamal Adams, he's coming in. He's going to be your starter. He's your starter because you can't keep that guy on the bench with his physicality and his athleticism. But you draft guys later in rounds, you're going to bring him in. You're going to develop those guys, and, you know, they might get beat out for the starting jobs. You never know. But you got to build from within. Another Bears point, roster, the outlook for the roster. Still some moves to be made. I wrote a piece a while ago on my website, WinningCityChronicle.com, on who the Bears should be cutting in the next couple of days. And I got the Tracy Porter right. Some people were shocked by that. I wasn't really. You know, he didn't have the same plays he did last year. You know, that was one of Pace's better signings. You know, I like that. That was a good signing. You know, he was a veteran guy. He was still, you know, toward the end of the prime of his career. He was a good solid corner. He just last year, he played all games, but you could just see he was playing hurt. He was losing his step, especially against the really, really talented wide receivers. You just wasn't hanging with them. So it was time to get him time to ship him out, especially with all the signs we had at cornerback in the offseason so far. Another guy I expect to be gone is Lamar Houston. 2 ACLs in 3 years. You know, you don't really know what you're going to get out of him. It's hard to see him coming back. I think it's time that you move on from him and you draft a pass rusher, either if it's Myles Garrett who falls to 3, which would be crazy, or you draft one in the later rounds because the Bears have a good amount of picks. They got 1, 2, 3, 2 4s, 5, and a 7. They've got a 6 right now, and I think that you'll be exploring Kyle Fuller. Yeah, you'll be exploring trades for Kyle Fuller, I think, come draft time. Because, you know, what Vic Fangio said last season. Michael, you there? Yeah, so I think the Bears are going to do some work to get a 6 pick in the draft because, you know, it starts with building up the roster, and you got to get as much young guys as possible. So, you know, you don't know who they're next. You know, possibly Kyle Fuller. There's any value out of him, but I'm not sure if there will be. Michael, do you have any thoughts on that?
That's a pretty safe debate to have.
Michael will be right back. He's having some technical difficulties, but he will be right back on shortly. We'll get his take on the roster, how far. We'll get his take on more of the draft and much more of the Bears season to come. We are coming in on 20 minutes left on the show. So we're going to more about the draft order. If you're thinking about the Bears trending down, you would not think it's that far, because you still, if you were to trade down, you know, if someone wants to come up and get your guy, but when you look at it, like who teams want to come up and get, you know, there's not a, you know, after Myles Garrett, you know, who's a for sure fire, who's a for sure guy in the top five that you want? I mean, yeah, you want to get a quarterback in Trubisky, you want to get a quarterback in Watson, you want to get Jamal Adams, but Jamal Adams, you know, number three is pretty high for safety. He'd be the highest paid safety in the league, I think, if it was picked at three. So who are you trading up to get? Do you like Solomon Thomas? You're going to trade up and get him? Jonathan Allen, you really think he's going to be a playmaker? You're going to get up and get him? So I really don't see – there's not a lot of scenarios I see where the Bears trade down. Who's really coming up to get someone at three? But, I mean, I think the most reasonable is the Bears use their third pick, and then they trade back into the first round. Because I think if they want to get a QB in the second – that it's I think it'd be hard, you know, because you got in the second round, it's you're picking behind Cleveland, 49ers, Jacksonville, and then it's you in the second round. And for all we know, Cleveland and 49ers could pass on a quarterback in the first two picks. It's really possible, because there's so many scenarios that could happen on the NFL draft day. It's crazy, you know, what could happen. So you see that possibility. So you would have to, I would think you have to trade back up in the first, because you can't take the risk. You don't want to be sitting there at four. You don't want to be sitting there at 36 overall. Okay, we got our guy. We got Kaiser. Kaiser, we'll take Kaiser. And all of a sudden, right ahead of you, Jacksonville. You know, I know they got Bortles, but I wouldn't be surprised if they draft a quarterback. Bortles just, he's not what he used to be, and I don't think he's going to be a winner for them going forward. That's my take, just real quick. So, yeah, so say Jacksonville. All of a sudden, Jacksonville Jaguars select Sean Kaiser, quarterback, Notre Dame. All of a sudden, you're sitting there, bump on a log, your guy's gone. And then you're just, I mean, who do you take? You got to get a QB sometime, but it's not your guy. That's, again, leaning back to if Ryan Pace has his guy at three, take him. We're not playing risk here. We're playing an NFL franchise that needs to get back on its feet, needs to develop a quarterback. Haven't done that. Don't have the history of doing that. So you got to get a quarterback at some point. And I think two sitting in the second round at 36, just it's a risk. It really is a risk. I think you got to trade back up. Let's check in on Michael here. Let's see if he's back with us. Michael, you there?
Well, they run.
Michael has just informed me via text message that there is some technical difficulties on his end. So as we come up with 15 minutes left in the show, we'll see if we can get him on for any tidbits. Or otherwise, we'll have to wait for the next time the Windy City Chronicle podcast goes live. So as we finish out the show here, just another quick hit on the Bears. The schedule came out, and I just recently wrote an article on WindyCityChronicle.com about this tough start to the season that they're going to have. They open up with really four tough games. I mean, it's tough, man. You got first game, you got Atlanta at home. You got the Philippines coming to you. It's going to be Daniel Jones against what should be what's going to be a revamped secondary. It's going to be tough. And then game two, you're off to Tampa. Jameis Winston destroyed the Bears last year. 36-10, Tampa came out on top after the Bears' bye week. Had 2 weeks to prepare for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they just flat-out stunk. And then next, you have to come back home, and you're not playing a scrub team. You're not playing a rebuilding team. You're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, Big Ben, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell. It's going to be tough, and then that's going to be a tough game, and I think the Bears really got to step it up at one. The Bears were 7th against the run last year, so I like the chances against Bell, but in the passing game, it might be really hard to watch. And then four, you got to go to Green Bay for a Thursday night football. The Bears brought it versus Green Bay last year, especially at Soldier Field. Aaron Rodgers beating the deep ball. That really ended the Bears in that game. Mason Crosby game winning field goal. That's as close as the Bears got to beating the Packers last season when they played them at Soldier Field. Leonard Floyd had a great game. It's just that that's when Brian Hoyer got hurt, and then you put in Matt Barkley. He had two interceptions. It just really the Bears. I could possibly see an 0-4 start out of this Bears team next year. I'm not writing anybody off. I'm not writing anything off yet. We could see depends who they draft and how the roster shapes out that I could change my mind. I could see a lot from the preseason. I could see a lot of healthy guys that were hurt last year and say, okay, we got a chance now. We're not going 0-4. 2-2 would be ideal. I'd say if we were to go 2-2 that you beat, I'd say you beat Tampa for sure. And maybe I'd say Pittsburgh because their defense is not, as stellar as it was in the Super Bowl, Super Bowl champion Steelers. So it's not, it's still got a young secondary and they don't got anybody. I really think that could hurt us up front on the defensive line to come get the quarterback. So I don't think the Steelers would be that much of a threat. So I'd say 2-2 with their Tampa Bay and the Steelers. I don't see us beating the Falcons, and the Green Bay Pack is always a tough one, especially at Lambeau. Michael looks like he can come back on now. So let's get his last thoughts as the show is coming to an end here.
What's that, guys? Did I just hear you say that you think the Bears are going to be 2-2?
I said if we're looking at an ideal situation, if I said depending on the draft picks and how the roster shapes out, the Bears could start 2-2 if they really have the roster to do it and the competitive level.
I think you're expecting a lot more out of this draft than what really be done. I mean, if starting the season and you're going to get like last year where you get contributions from a lot of rookies, that generally means you're not a good team. I mean, best case scenario, you get a starter or two. I don't know how you – sure, you can always beat the Falcons, it's Super Bowl hangover. They're starting the season on the road, maybe. Maybe you get lucky. But then you're going down to Tampa, and who knows Mike Glennon better than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then you have the Steelers. Big Ben's coming back. Are going to be for real. I mean, let's just assume that Le'Veon Bell is going to be healthy and not suspended. The Steelers are going to beat the Bears. And then you have Aaron Rodgers on national TV. That isn't going to go well 4 days later. I mean, really, I think the Bears should be lucky. I mean, the Bears should be lucky they have in the first month of the season.
I think right now looking at it, I could say they could go, 0-4 in my recent post. But, I mean, yeah, those Tampa are better than Mike Glennon, so I think they could steal one there. But, again, look what happened last season. They just got routed 36-10 and off the bye week, too, which was just – it was a shock.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything could happen. I could very easily see the Bears not winning a game before the bye.
Huh. That would not be good.
I mean, you got – the Falcons, Steelers, Vikings, and Panthers at home. Those are all losable games. You got to go up to Green Bay. You got to go down to Tampa. I mean, the Ravens aren't what they used to be, but you got to go to Baltimore.
Yeah.
And then you got to go down to New Orleans with Drew Brees. And I mean, the the Saints are an interesting team to see what they're going to do with the draft coming up. And, you know, they could be making a trade with New England again for some more defense.
So before you had to ditch out for a while, you were talking about how the Bears should not go QB at three, and you backed it up. So if the Bears don't go QB at three, who is your ideal prospect that you would want the Bears to take?
They're stuck at three. I mean, because ideally, I would like to see them out of three. I would like to let some desperate team like the Jets or, you know, maybe someone who wants to trade up for Fournette, or maybe someone who thinks they need to make sure that they get ahead. Trubisky, I mean, like, that's the weird thing. Mitch Trubisky is somehow becoming the can't-miss prospect. And before, I mean, like, before the draft process started, Watson, Trubisky, and Kaiser. Now, Kaiser's totally fallen back. Mahomes is now the fast riser. Watson's just kind of there. And the big problem, I mean, you could take Jonathan Allen. He seems to still be up there, even with what the injury concerns. But ideally, I'd want one of the safeties, except you got to be sure you're getting the right guy. Because if you're drafting the safety that high, they need to be Ed Reed, Ronnie Lott, Troy Polamalu type talent.
Yeah.
And they got to be a surefire thing. So, I mean, it's ideally I would like to trade out, but I would rather see them make a safety. And even the same thing with corner. If you're taking a corner at three, he better be Charles Woodson or Grant Bailey. You can't get, like, not even a Revis is worth a top three pick. I mean, you need a Hall of Famer guy who's going to be locking down one side of the field for the next 10 years.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you look at you can go at three, and also Solomon Thomas is there if you want to get a pass rusher. But, yeah, like you said with the safeties, I mean, you got to be sure. You know, Jamal Adams has all the physical tools. He's got the athleticism and the versatility, but then you look, compare him to Hooker, and he doesn't have the interception takeaways, the interceptions as Hooker does. So that you could say that maybe it could be a hole in his.
But Hooker's got a lot of injury issues. He's got a lot of red flags. You know, we just lived through Alshon Jeffrey and those soft injuries. Do we really need a cornerback or safety coming up with a hamstring every other week?
Yeah, no, I know. I agree with you there. I like Hooker as a player. I just do not want him on the team. I would want Adams.
I mean, another guy would be Solomon Thomas. But, I mean, the real tricky part is, I mean, unless stun everybody, they're taking Myles Garrett. You know, there's a lot of names that have been thrown in at the 49, and, you know, nobody knows what John Lynch and Shannon are going to do yet. There is no track record there.
No.
And they haven't, I mean, they both have, like, 6-year deals. I mean, they have enough time to go ahead and take the risk. They really want Mahomes, or they really want Trubisky, or they want Watson. They could take them, and they could, that quarterback could flame out, and they'll still have another chance to draft QB in a year or two. Or also remember, I'm pretty sure Kyle Shanahan was in Washington the year that his dad took RG3 and Kirk Cousins in the same draft. So, I mean, I would. I think he knows he can be a quarterback later in this draft if he's the right guy. So I'm not sold on the 49ers doing that. Just like the Bears, the 49ers have a lot of holes. They could go anywhere. And they're just, besides Myles Garrett, some guys like Booger McFarland have questions on. There is no sure, like, yes, this is the guy we need to go get.
Yeah, and going back to, if they're locked up for a while, they can, you know, if they fail. But, they could for sure. There's plenty of quarterbacks that they could get in the lower rounds, you know, Kaiser or Brad Kaya. They could get him. They can get Petterman from Pitt. So there's plenty of quarterbacks they could get later if they want to get the best available at that position.
I mean, I'm not sure if you saw, like, so Kyle came out with his three-round draft, and then he came out with what he basically picked for every team. Like, these are the players to basically get an A from him. And in that scenario, he has Watson going to the second round. Now, I mean, I think if he's there in the second round, I think the Bears have to take him.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can risk it at three. I mean, we'll see what they do. I mean, we don't know what Ryan Pace is going to do. He out years ago said we got to draft a quarterback every year, but hasn't.
Uh-huh.
And then is John Fox really going for the? I mean, it seems like the Bears are rebuilding, but everything about do you think that we're not rebuilding? I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, my personal pick, I'm taking Jamal Adams, and I'm locking down at least one safety position, which the Bears have been able to do since they had Mike Brown.
Yeah, they haven't had an impact guy since him. And yeah, I'm wanting the Bears to take Jamal Adams since, you know, January, February when I saw him, you know, stand out on tape. But, you know, there's all the talk on, you know, he'd be the highest paid safety, and the Bears really want to take a safety at three. Do they take a quarterback, or do they get a pass rusher, which they also need? So, there's a lot of questions, but again, we won't know for sure until draft night.
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out Thursday. It'll be interesting. I mean, I think ideally, Ryan Pace needs to find that backup plan, and he needs to, you know, he needs to make everyone think that he's quarterback, or that he's willing to talk, or that he's talking to a team like the Jets or, I mean, Buffalo even. I mean, there's a lot of teams out there that don't have, who are in a worse quarterback situation than the Bears, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I mean, like, God, the 49ers just took the two Bears castoffs, Sawyer and Barkley. That's their depth chart right now. Jacksonville is already ready to give up on Blake Bortles. I mean, Tennessee is good. The Jets, again, they just think they're going to draft a quarterback every year, and they're going to keep wasting them.
No, yeah, there's
Chargers.
There's,
they probably don't. Oh, they don't draft a quarterback in round one, but they're going to be looking because Phillip Rivers get there, and they're going to need that name to compete with Jared Goff, or possibly become the new face of L football. Jared Goff is a bust. The Panthers aren't going to take a quarterback. The Bengals probably aren't either. But then you get the Bills and you get the Saints. And
Bills
could use another quarterback. I think that's high. I think with their second pick in the first, they could take a quarterback.
Texans.
But see, the Texans draft after the Browns. The key pick is who is going to get ahead of where the Browns pick at 12. Because Browns have to walk away with the quarterback. People think. I actually argue that maybe they won't. Kessler could be their quarterback. They got Osweiler from the Texans. They got Kessler.
Uh-huh.
They could be okay if they don't like any of these guys. Like Jackson, he's pretty stable right now. I mean, it's the Browns, so you're never really stable. But before 12 is where that's it's going to be, because after that, then all the other quarterbacks are fair. But if you don't have a quarterback going until pick 12, then everyone knows they just have to get it down there. And then how high do they want to go? But really, the guy, I think, if it's not going to be for a quarterback, it's going to be for Fournette. I think that's where people are going to – are they just going to let everyone sit back and let the Panthers get him at 8?
Yeah, and there's obviously a lot of possibilities, and we won't know for sure. You know, this week it's going to be a lot of draft rumors. It's going to be a big rumor mill coming into the draft on Thursday, but won't know for sure till then. Seems like we are out of time on the first episode of the Windy City Chronicle podcast. Thanks to Alex and thanks to Michael for coming on. Talked a lot of good stuff today. Stuff coming up. We got Bulls Game 4 tomorrow, 5:30 at the United Center. Got the draft on Thursday, so it's going to be a big week in Chicago sports coming up. I'm Thomas Gibbons, your host. You can follow me on Twitter @ThomasGibbons_3. You can follow Alex Pat on Twitter at ShyFanPat with two T's, one. And you can follow Michael Gibbons on Twitter at GibbsReport. Thanks, Michael, again for coming on.
No problem. Sorry about the interruption.
No problem. And we will see you all next time on the next episode of the Windy City Chronicle podcast. Thank you.